This is the October 22nd, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearings before us involve the 2023 petitions owned by the Higgin family. They are petition numbers 1043 through 1049. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Joshua Florette here for the assessor's office, and we do have Dale Hagen here on behalf of the appellant. If you could both please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Could you read in the property numbers, all the numbers?
Yeah, I will do that. Really quick, before we read in, we swear everyone in. Our property IDs for these seven properties are 986-056-207, 986-056-204, 986-056-208, 986-056-205, 986-056-209, 986-042-293, and 986-056-206. And those, again, are petition numbers 1043 through 1049. If the appellant and the assessor's office representative could now please raise their right hand to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
I do.
Thank you. I'm going to repeat again the information that I give the appellant primarily just for the benefit of the assessor's office. We're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your properties as of January 1st, 2023. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure again, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mr. Hagen, to explain the same theory, I believe, belongs to all of these properties. If there's something individually on a property, you could point that out. But generally speaking, I think you're going to be speaking about all of the properties in general.
I think that's a good reality statement there, and I appreciate it. And so I'll try to do that. So I think that the properties have always been maybe confusing at the assessor's office. They look at a quarter section map. They take a certain flyover, I believe, and it looks on the quarter section map as that there's lots out there and that they could be ready for development. Not only does it look that way, but it also looks like they're running all along the south side of Northeast 164th Street Public Road. I don't think there's any acknowledgement or recognition that there's absolutely no access allowed to Northeast 164th Street. It's been covenanted against any access along the south side of that roadway. So the only potential access is coming in really from the private road on the west side. You could argue that there could be some access off of the public road on the 202nd public road on the east side, but the distance between the intersection of 164th and the private drive access to the south thereof leaves a very not a good room distance accessing to come in from that side of things. So the access is perceived at some point to work off the private road. Irregardless, wherever you start coming from, these lots, most of them are all in between anything that would have any kind of a frontage to a. There's only the Dale and Yana lot and the Michelle lot along the private road on the west side that could have some level of access without cooperation with everybody else. So if you're a Brian to the east of Michelle, or if you're anybody else to the west of Christie, you don't front any kind of a road. It requires a private road. And the bottom line is all these, none of these are going to work unless there's cooperation between all of them, unless there's engineering expenses between all of them, CEPA requirements and everything else to build a public road with nowadays storm drainage requirements, which is an extensive process and an expensive process. So what you really got right now is you've got a field. Nobody could go out there and even identify where their property is because there's never been any staking or anything like that. The reason why this came to be was a dear person, a loved one in our family, at death bequeathed these properties in individual areas to us, and it amounts to a testamentary subdivision on paper. But in reality, it's a field until somebody spends a bunch of money to work out all the details and the accesses and the drainage and the storm drainage and the electricity and all the things that would go with it to make them lot areas. So on paper, it looks like, oh, there's a little area. We'll just, it's out in the Hawkinson area. That's a good area. We'll just keep bumping the prices. So when we came to you at the Board of Equalization a few years ago, I thought, well, it was misunderstood to begin with. And the assessor was showing some pretty healthy values, and we appealed. And they were lowered as per our request at the Board of Appeals. And now they are bumping back up. And they're not just bumping up at a reasonable escalatory rate. They're bumping up too much, as though they're lots instead of field area that's got potential to become legitimate, usable lots. So we did have the properties appraised by the MAI appraiser, who actually had appraised the lots when we came to the Board of Equalization prior, and he's come up with his valuations as to what they are now, and they're nowhere near what the assessor still is suggesting that they should be. So our request is that an appraiser, qualified MAI, well respected, has reviewed them again, similar circumstances, a little escalation for time. He's come up with higher valuations than he did back in the 21 appraisals. But for us, it's like, okay, they've got some abilities to become something other than what they are. So, you kind of like bite your lip even at the MAI appraisals and say, okay, it's an expensive world out there. Fine. But you can't do anything on these lots right now except not know where the field, where ownership stop and start, and collectively you can have it mowed to keep the fire danger down across from the school and stuff like that. Collectively you can have it engineered and spend a bunch of money for all of that and go through CEPA review, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a long, far cry off for, you know, the concept of appraising these as lots that look like they're buildable and have access to 164th Street versus field area that have no use right now other than a field mowing. And that's our basic presentation. I think it's just, it's as real can be. There's just nothing other than real as what I'm describing it, and I appreciate the appropriate consideration. I appreciate it if somebody could make a mark on it, the assessor's office, and not just keep flying at such a high flight level that they don't really recognize what the situation is. Because it'd be nice not to have to come back again and again and have it appraised again and again to have it technically fall into a category that it can be heard again for everybody's time's sake. I think it's just a misunderstood property, and the assessor's office has been flying at too high of a flight level to understand it. Thank you.
Any questions so far?
No questions.
No questions.
Okay, Josh, you want to talk about this from the assessor's side?
Yeah, so I think, I know there's a lot of documentation here. I was working with Allison when she was preparing it for you guys, we're not probably going to have time to get through all of it, so I'm going to talk at sort of a broad level. I think that everybody, I think, generally has a concept of the properties that we're discussing. There are seven that are located across the street from Hawkinson Elementary on 164th Street in Hawkinson. So in the prior appeals and the prior appraisal that was submitted with the appeals, there's a lot of reference talking about no ability to access up 164th Street, that 202nd is untenable, et cetera. However, there is access off of 197th, which is to the west of all of these properties. And consequently, since their prior appeals and since the first appraisal that was submitted, the family has recorded an easement, which I have included the easement documentation as well as the imagery showing the easement that was filed for and what that would look like. And that's providing access off of 197th Avenue to the west of all of these properties, going west to east and ending at the final account that's at 986-056-206. And this is a key point because in the appraisal that they submitted, I'm sorry if I'm talking too quick or if it's difficult to locate these things. In the appraisal that's submitted, there's on page 18, there's a breakdown of cost to develop. And item 2 is largely irrelevant. These properties are owned by family members who have a vested interest in the viability of all seven accounts, as evidenced by them being appealed together. This adjustment, item number 2, is inappropriate for that reason alone, but also due to the fact that there's an easement now documented. Item 3, in this, there's a calculation for 1,100 linear feet of road, utilities, cost to make accounts viable. So this is the distance from 197th Avenue on the west to that final account number, 986-056-206, on the east, that entire distance. The calculation comes to $100,000. For this. This is for the benefit of all seven properties, and at most the calculation would be $100,000 divided by seven, or $14,285 per account. This incorrect adjustment here, I'm not arguing the cost to develop, but the reason why this is problematic is this is carried down to the comparable sales grid on page 25, where you can see a negative $100,000 for each sale that's presented. Again, that cost is for all seven properties dispersed across all seven and should not be removed at $100,000 per sale in the grid. Additionally, the reason why that's problematic in the comparable sales grid is that these other properties also do not have utilities. They're bare land. And so there is a cost to bring utilities and site development for any vacant parcel. And the and Clark County recognizes this. We value land per the lot, but we also have a separate adjustment for site development, which is not present on any of the seven accounts here. As we recognize, they do not have site improvements on them currently. As far as the sales grid that was presented by the appraiser, sales number one is coded as invalid at Clark County for various reasons. I was unable to locate sale number two. It doesn't have any identifiable parcel number or its own address. It's saying that it's near this account. Both of those sales are substantially low, as anyone who's seen land sales could attest to. Also, kind of concerning, you can see on the sales grid near the bottom, total gross adjustments. Some of these percentages are way outside of standard appraisal practices. There's 138% gross adjustments and 180% on sales number one and two. This is due in part to that $100,000 site development adjustment that was made incorrectly down there. The assessor's office has provided sales of bare land located within 5 miles of the subject parcels. All four sales are bare land without any site improvements and thus do not need any adjustments as that goes, as all properties, the subject seven accounts as well as the sales, would require costs to develop and have utilities brought to them, be that water and sewer if available or well and septic. Cell number one is closest in proximity, located in the same neighborhood, and smaller than the subject parcels. This sale is most indicative of the subject properties given its close setting within proximity. Sale number two is in the same neighborhood, but in a more remote setting versus the subject properties located directly across the street from Hawkinson Heights Elementary School. Sale number four is also located in the subject's neighborhood, but is 5 acres with a sales price of $607,000. This is just to illustrate what 5 acres close in Hawkinson can sell for. And sale number three is slightly larger in size of the subject, but located further away than the first two sales. All of the sales that the assessor's office has presented, again, are bare land, just like the subject properties. They require their own cost to develop and are not present with any site improvements, just like subject properties.
Josh, when you were talking about the appellant's comps, and you said comp one is not a good comp, and you just said for various reasons. What are the reasons?
I need to find that. We have to sales. Real estate ratio, as well as just their move.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you. You said something about a ratio? The adjustment ratio? Is that what you're talking about?
I said we have to code sales for the state ratio. Sorry, is that better?
No.
No, it's not better.
That's better. Talk a little. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay. This sale was not exposed to the open market. So it is not a arm's length transaction.
Any other reasons, or was that the main reason?
That's the reason. It's coded. It's coded for our state ratio for that purpose. Yes, I was looking at it. I was getting that one mixed up with number two, which I was looking into. But it, like I said, it was difficult to ascertain what account that's actually supposed to be. What I thought it was a family. Family member to family member transaction.
You're talking about comp two now.
Correct.
I have a question on there. You mentioned this easement from 197th. So when was that actually recorded or whatever? Because, you know, we've always thought there was no easement in there. And so, you know, when did that easement thing get recorded?
Is that a question? Is that a question to
you? Yeah, that's a question. You said there was a recorded easement across from 197th through over to 202nd. I'm just wondering, when did that get recorded?
I believe the date on that, I think Mr. Hagen could probably answer that, but I believe the date on that was the end of 23.
The end of 23.
Is that the easement that's included in your package?
Yes, it is.
It's recorded on 10/11/10/22.
Okay.
Am I not correct? That's what it says on the top of the page, first page. Of the easement.
And that's the properties.
I'm not sure if this is the right time, Mr. Dale Hagen, but if you want me to talk about the easement, I can.
Go ahead.
Thank you. The easement is an effort. I mean, anytime you've looked at the quarter section map and you've seen the dots on it, that is an easement. That's not a just come immediately lately something. It's dotted on the quarter section map, recognizing there's an easement. And there's an easement that's been it's kind of a proposal. But it's actual, because that gives now the engineers something to work with and to work through a SEPA process and to actually even try to start coordinating what needs to be coordinated from that 197th Avenue. It's not exactly, there you can just start accessing 197th Avenue. That's largely a private road. It's a kind of got some weird angles to it that the McKeon-Sposito engineers have to work out to even figure out if we can get access that's going to be a recorded, undisputed ingress and egress into these lot areas. I think I know the answer, but Josh, could you tell me, did you ever bother to come out? Or are you just flying at a flight level back at the office and all this stuff?
I don't know what you mean by flying at a flight level, but I appraised all of Hawkinson.
Okay, so did you come out to the property?
We have to physically inspect every property every 6 years, so yes.
Okay, when did you physically inspect the property, please?
I believe that was in 23.
In 23. So you believe, but you're not sure. When you talk about the easement.
I find that nothing, fairly dismissive, but we have to physically inspect every single property. I've driven past those things countless times.
That means you drive by it.
And it is,
can you tell
it
me?
Is not
can
just
you tell me? If,
by, no.
Is, can you tell me if you can use that easement you're referring to get onto? Can you drive out here and drive on that easement onto the property right now?
There is currently not access to those properties, the road at the moment, which is what the adjustment
and why
was
is that?
In the appraisal.
Besides the legalities of 197th Avenue, you would see a fence all around that property. None of these owners could even drive through that fence the way things are. It's at a state that is field. Nobody could even tell a lot area from another lot area. There's a lot of drainage issues relative to Hawkinson besides the massive storm drainage things that you have to work out for building a private road. But there's a lot of engineering that's going to have to go into some of these lots for this whole area, or you're going to have one lot here or there underwater. It doesn't have access. It's a field area. It's got a cooperative easement that's basically a proposal that the engineers can work with to try to get an approval ultimately. And there will be a ton of time and money spent on all of this area in order to actually make these lots. So when you start referring to, oh, this lot sold for that and this lot sold for that, you're not taking into account that this is basically a field area. It's got just a little something different from it than if you were starting from scratch with land that was like zoned that you could actually develop. And that's just because there was a testamentary subdivision that broke it into individual areas. But it broke it into individual areas that nobody can use, like it would be if somebody just owned a field and it was zoned correctly for that. They could start some kind of a process to make it into lots. But they're effectively not lots other than the technicality of the testamentary subdivision. So for me, to appear as though you can talk straightforward about these as individual lot areas with no differences between other bare land, you said something like they're just like the subject properties. They're not like the subject properties at all. And I just think, again, I think it's because of the flight level and the lack of true looking at it and understanding it, and looking at the history and really going out and standing on what you call a comparable property and looking at it and understanding the difference. If that one's buildable, it doesn't take a bunch of SEPA reviews and storm drainage, this and that, and all of that in order to do something. Yes, it takes a process to go through a building permit process or something. But a far cry from what we're looking at here in a field area that right now nobody can even go out there and stand on their property because it's never even been staked, let alone have any kind of an access to it other than now we're referring to this easement that somebody could climb over a fence and technically walk on. That's the true nature of this property.
I don't have any other questions.
No, I'm good on it.
Anything else, Josh?
No, I'm good.
Thank you.
Let me ask one quick question about the development. I mean, and I think Mr. Hagen was finally kind of dancing at it, but when you say you have to put the $100,000 on, spread it across all the properties, Would that be true if, I mean, if you sold one of the properties in order to access that property, wouldn't that individual property have to spend $100,000? I mean, if one property were sold and he wanted to access it, he'd have to pay for the whole shooting match himself. Is that not correct?
If you're asking me, that's true, and I can tell you right now, just from the engineering bills that we've already been incurring, engineering bills already relative to just the preliminary this and that and trying to take it somewhere, it's past that or close to it. It's only been going so far, but the projections for what it will cost is just – gee, I'd like to make, you know, if that's what it says in an appraisal, and I only understand appraisal analogy so much, and he picked and choose from something that was being said that I don't quite understand. But real ground, I'll tell you, these are going to be very expensive to develop. And yes, one standing on its own would have to do the whole thing, but technically one could even do it without cooperative this and figuring out how to access 197th Avenue to where it's undisputable. And then we're going to get into engineering things on drainage and storm drainage that actually, even if one lot wanted to do something and wanted to spend all the money, they're going to have to infringe over on somebody else's lots because there's land the drainage considerations are going to have to be designed to where it works for everybody. So if somebody just had a big money full of pocket and thought they are just going to go do it myself, they would have problems doing it themselves because there's going to have to be listening to the engineer and basically being told what's going to have to be cooperated with in order to make it all work in the end for everybody. So it'd be very hard for a lone wolf to even do something if they could, but they would certainly be on their own in theory at whatever the costs are. And then, of course, other than you can assume they're family members and no one's wanting to take advantage of somebody, but in reality, if you had a sibling that had some money, and you have a sibling that doesn't have any money, even if there's good intentions, good chance, good luck on getting paid back for, you know, just moving ahead on your own. So it's complicated in it, and it's complicated because it starts with love from somebody who died that wasn't communicating with other people that passed the property on, and it's passed on in a state that nothing can be done without a lot of process and a lot of money and a lot of coordination. I don't think anybody could really wing it on their own if they wanted to.
Let me ask, and you may have said this and I missed it in the process. Are these individual properties, have they been surveyed and staked with survey stakes?
Not at all, not never.
So it's an open field with these designations as lots described but not surveyed.
That's right. It's just so far.
So I see that we're nearing wrapping up, if I may. You know, these lots are recorded. The legal description describes them. It's not uncommon for properties to be surveyed, particularly when it's bare land. A lot of these arguments are basically just development arguments that go with any bare land that exists. Obviously, the owners are taking steps to make these lots buildable, evidenced by engineering and other statements made by the owner, and whether or not if they sold one account and that would be the cost, the $100,000 would be the cost incurred for one lot, that's not presently what the situation is. Presently, the situation is family members own these lots. They have a vested interest together. They have appealed the properties together, indicating all of that. It's an entirely different situation. We handle land differently when one owner owns all of the parcels, one individual owner, as opposed to this circumstance where it's family members, where one individual owner owns, three accounts that have been created all adjacent to one another, versus there being three separate owners that would then have to do some sort of workaround and achieve an easement across someone else's account. This is an entirely different circumstance and not what is presently being discussed. This is family members that own all seven accounts.
Hey, Josh, how in the world would anybody like, say, Christy, for instance, or Jenna, take Jenna's lot out there that you call a lot, who would she, you appraise it as of a certain year, as though it's worth that, who would she possibly sell it to if all the other siblings, they were fighting with each other or they weren't fighting with each other? She just wanted to sell hers because it's worth so much money. Who would she sell it to for that much money? Who? And how would that work? It's not worth that now. It's all trajectory. If there's cooperation and there's lots of money spent and there's lots of details to get worked out, at some point, it looks like they can be lots. If all the family members keep loving each other and they cooperate with each other and they have enough money to contribute to making it something. But right now, if Christy has no money and she just wants to sell, who does she sell it to?
I'm not dealing in hypotheticals here. I've visited my case.
Josh, do you have any brothers and sisters?
That's irrelevant.
Well, it isn't irrelevant because what he described is exactly correct. I mean, if you don't have cooperation of the brothers and sisters, this is not like me owning six lots out there and I can do anything I damn well please on any one of the six lots. It's like six individuals and sometimes even worse than unrelated parties because you have an element of the existence of a relationship that's far different than individual parties. You can't go up and swear to them and negotiate with them like you could another party. So, I mean, that decision of valuation is a falsity.
It seems as though they've gotten two appraisals jointly. They filed for an easement jointly that goes across all accounts and are appealing their accounts jointly.
Well, that's as far as they've gotten. So you can't, we've had a ruling from the Board of Tax Appeals that says that you can't value land based on what it might be worth someday if this and this and this and this happen. You have to go with what it is today.
No one's projected this to something that it's not worth today.
Are we about done, Mr. Chairman, with this hearing?
Yeah. I have no more questions.
No. I don't have any other questions.
Anything else for either party?
Thank you.
Okay, let's close the hearing.
This is the October 22nd, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petitions 98, 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, 105, all owned by the Higgins for the property value appeal year for 2024 for taxes paid in 2025. This includes property IDs 98604293, 986056204, 986056205, 986056206, 98605-6207, 98605-6208, and 98605-6209. Again, these are all properties owned by the Hagen family. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Joshua Florette here on the assessor's office, and we do have Dale Hagen here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hands to be sworn in now.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Josh, I have a quick question. That I only have one set of information from you, and I believe it applies just to the 24
so
values. Is that correct?
The information he submitted, just, I should have stated this before, it does apply for 2023 for 2024, but the assessed values, I think, are what I provided you all in that table. But Josh, go ahead and add. I'm sorry.
Yeah, all the documentation is the same. The assessed values are slightly different year to year. Just the fact of state of the real estate market currently, it's not like each year is providing an abundance of land sales. So land sales need to be used for across multiple years for what's available currently. And thus, there's not really any difference there in the information being displayed. I also don't have anything really further to add. I think everything was in, you know, the easement that they filed for was already in place for both years.
Wait a minute. In addition, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a little to no change in values between 23 and 24. Is that correct?
Correct. There might be a slight difference, but it's minor.
But the market itself didn't have a major increase.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's go first to Mr. Hagen, and if he's got anything else to add for 2024, I mean, I think we've pretty well exhausted it, but if you have anything else to add specifically for 2024...
Thank you. No, the thing that that comes to mind is I'm agreeing when I hear in this conversation, in the conversation that I had with the MAI appraiser that was looking at it for both of these years that we're talking about, he said the same thing. There wasn't comps to justify differences. He came to the same evaluation in that process. So honestly, I do think I pretty much exhausted the basic situation. It's just that it keeps keeping on. It gets changed from something, and then even when there's not a reason for a market change, really, there's this concept in the assessor's minds that, oh, everything should just be adjusted upward because it just should be. But I don't think any of the comps that are available and what have you would justify that. And other than that, I think everything that I said before would apply in the 24 for 25 position on where we should be with these properties. So thanks very much for letting me have the opportunity. I appreciate you guys' time very much.
Okay. Now go ahead, Josh, if you have things to add for the 2024 year.
No, I think we pretty well exhausted everything with the 23 hearing.
I mean, I'm looking at the values. I'm looking at the values from 23 to 24. I mean, in overall, I don't think any of them changed more than $10,000. Between the 2 years in the assessed value.
And
you agree?
Of course, I don't think that the 23 to 24 should be where he put them.
I understand that.
And yeah, thank you. Okay, understood.
Any more questions, board members?
No questions for me.
No. I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. We'll close the hearing.
This is the October 22nd, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 99 for property ID 98605694. The property is owned by Lisa Hagen. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Dale Hagen here for the appellant. If you could now please raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Absolutely, yes I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know or remind you if you've forgotten, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. On this one.
Yes.
Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to let you go ahead and explain your appeal on this one.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Weaver. And I appreciate the board being available to hear this today in the different configurations. As it relates to this property in Meadowglade for Lisa Hagen's ownership, it's particularly strange. It was one of actually all of these that came before the board in, I guess it was, in 2020 for 2021. And, at that time it was, indicating it was going to a certain value. I thought that it wasn't understood about the circumstances of the property at all, and we appealed, and we had a favorable outcome as we had requested, provided appraisal, and it came in like at $110,000, and it was there for a while. So when I look at these things in front of me, and I see appraised value and assessed value, I'm not seeing anything that indicates $110,000, and that's a little confusing to me because I think in 2021 or 2022, I believe its new value was $110,001. But regardless, the situation on this property as it sits in the middle of a bunch of other properties that are owned by mostly Lisa's siblings, and the only exception is there's one owned by Dale and Yana Hagen, which is me and my wife. We're husband and wife. We acquired this property essentially as a field from somebody very dear to us that died and transferred at death individual property areas that came to be amounted to what I understand is a testamentary subdivision. But in reality, the ground is just ground. It's just a field. It's blackberry bushes. It's field. It takes a lot of everything to build a private road, especially these days with the storm drainage requirements and all of that. You have to go through a lot of engineering, a lot of process to be able to build a road and access any of these properties. Now, Lisa's property happens to be kind of in the middle of other properties. She's got Jenna to the south of her. She's got Christy, Michelle, Brian, and Alan to the north of her. That road has to go through everybody else's property, largely over on Alan's property, to even give her access. So she doesn't even have access without an easement getting facilitated in a way that, she doesn't have vehicular access. So the property right now, if you go out there, is just a field. It doesn't have engineering. The quarter section map looks like they're like, 5-acre pieces, but in reality, well, they are 5-acre pieces, but then they go down into sensitive lands and very steep runoff and stuff. So there's a building pad ultimately. If there's a road that gets built with a utility in it and all of that, but It's a long ways away from electricity or anything else. So then what was very strange, I missed it, in that we didn't get that we're in for Board of Reconvening on other ones because they all come at the same time to a P.O. box, and for whatever reasons unexplained, we didn't get them. So I missed it originally, and Lisa just paid her taxes. And then when we went for the next year and we were looking at things and thought, okay, whoa, we've got to put in a motion of reconvening on those, I looked at the Meadowglade properties kind of sparsely and seen that to my surprise, when I looked at the different names, the assessor had actually lowered all the values up as compared to what we had last left them for at the Board of Equalization previously. So I just skipped over Lisa's. And Lisa had hers, and she's young and doesn't know the difference, and just paid an amount. But for instance, when you go down through these properties, they're all kind of very similar properties, only Lisa's in the middle and doesn't have any access. They're all in the 50s and some in the 60s. The one Lisa's sister, just to the north of her, Christy, has an assessed valuation of $56,098. Jenna, on the south of her, has an assessed value of $52,683. And Lisa, somehow, they just decided it was $403,985. So I know we're not in a position for reconvening on this. We're just in a position for trying to correct a bad situation. And so I'm requesting that it gets to be at a reasonable place. We had the properties appraised by the MAI appraiser, Paul Jackson from the Jackson Group. He had appraised the properties back when we originally appealed. And for the current time period, as he's got $135,000 on it now, up from what was, I believe, $100,000 the last time we were before the Board of Appeals. So we're requesting that, I think it's not worth $135,000. The appraiser that we hired feels the value on it now is $135,000. I certainly don't contest what somebody thinks with a well-reasoned review of things and has the qualifications. But the idea that a piece of a field that doesn't have access is worth $403,000, $985 in between properties that are in the 50,000 assessments that look just like it, essentially, pretty much, plus and minus. I think it was just an odd mistake to begin with. And then, I did get something here recently that said, that the assessor was willing to change it somewhat, but it's still off the chart. It just shouldn't be more than what the MAI appraiser has valued it at $135,000. And that's our request. There's a ton of money that has to be spent on this property, and there has to be coordination with all the other owners. Yes, they're siblings, so, that's cooperation would be, anticipated when you start curving the road to exactly how it has to be and bringing in utilities and all that kind of thing. But she couldn't sell this property right now for anything other than for speculation, thinking that someday there's going to be potentially a cooperative road and utilities built to it. So that's the situation. If you went out there right now, or if Lisa went out there for right now, she couldn't tell her boundaries. She wouldn't know where her lot is exactly. She would know kind of where it's at, but it hasn't even been surveyed to where it's ever had markers up or anything like that. It looks like part of a field, and there's berry vines growing in quite a bit of it that we keep down and that kind of thing. But that's the nature of the property, and that's the nature of this request, and I appreciate your consideration.
Are the other properties around it, are they all about 5 acres? Are they all about the same size?
Yes, they all basically were configured such that they went down into the ravine. That's a great picture. So you can basically see on this one, kind of the southeast area of it, that's kind of a building envelope, if you will. And then when you get to that tree line, that gets into sensitive area. And then it goes really, if you see in a topography map, it goes way down and down into a creek bed. But they're basically all 5 plus and minus acres. They all have at least 5 acres, and there may be a lot or two that you know have 5.2 acres or something like that, plus or minus. And it has, but as far as the building envelopes, a lot of them are what they are. And then you get to the one that starts up Allen's. Well, Allen's is the one that has to have an easement going all the way through it in order to figure out any access to everybody else. So he winds up with a net effective, less than the 5.2. So they're all, I think when that was put together for the purposes of what our dear Hazel had in mind, she had legal help doing it and what have you. I think it was trying to be kind of equal plus or minus scenarios for the kids portion of it, as that road goes through, and then everybody ultimately would have, in the concept of things, once a road got built, access kind of on the west side of that projected proposed roadway.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I got it. Thank you, sir. All right. Any other questions, John or Lisa?
I see that the assessor had recommended, it looks like, going down to 285, and you've got an appraisal on it at 135, but you're absolutely right. The property laying right beside it is at 56. So I guess we're the requested on it was 110, so we need to kind of come to an agreement, I guess, among us as the board as to where it fits compared to its neighbors and what's on the numbers.
I understand, and I appreciate it. I come before you today recognizing that the MAI appraisal, whatever reason, came in at 135. It's more than I think makes sense for what it is and what the situation is, and we felt like 110 was plenty, and I leave it to your discretion, but that's the true nature of it.
Okay. I'm fine. I'm good.
Me too.
Okay. And we'll close that here.
This is the October 22nd, 2024 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearings before us involve petitions number 994 through 1002, 1004, 1009 through 1012, and 1017. These are for the following property IDs. It will be, looks like they're in a succession too, 98605960 through 98605611, and then 98605613 through 98605918. And then 98605961 through 98605926. It is a total of 21 properties we will be listening to today. Board members present by video. All of these properties are owned by the K4 Group. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Lisa Bodner, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We do have Alexander Van Dinter here for the assessor's office. And then we have Christy Dent and James Kessie here on behalf of the appellant. If you could all please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Thank you. just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your properties as of January 1st, 2024. Got to get that right. Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as to the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you, the appellant, first to further explain your appeal.
James, do you care if I start?
No, please do.
All right, I'm Christy Dent. I've got a background.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Go ahead.
I'm Christy Dent. I have a background in commercial real estate, residential valuation, and also development. I'm helping James out on these appeals today. It's a lot of information. I know it's a whole stack of information. So my goal is to try to distill it down to just some of the basics for you. It is a total of 24 lots in the Lincoln Woods subdivision. Of the 24 lots, we are appealing 21 values today. There are a total of 17 detached homes, 4 attached, and 3 we are not appealing within those. So of the homes, for instance, let's start with the detached homes. And, well, it's also true for the attached homes. They're all very similar. This is a zero lot line development, small lots. I'm sure you're all very familiar with this product type. These types of products became very popular in the city and county areas in order to increase density in the urban areas.
I just want to know, did you look at the assessor's response? Because there's several of these where he agreed with you. And I'm thinking that maybe we don't need to go over those as much as we need to go over the ones where there's a disparity.
Did you? I didn't see anything where he agreed with ours. James, did you see that?
I don't know. I didn't.
Yes. No. I know we were emailed an assessor's response. I want to say it was on the 18th, James. You forwarded that to me. And it was essentially the one that you had already signed from quite a while ago. It had the same assessed values that you had already signed, and you had asked Allison that question.
Well, I had not already signed it. Petition number 1004. You were asking for $318,333, and the county said $308,962. So I'm guessing there wouldn't be a lot to discuss on that one.
Well, we have that one appealing at 271,380 as a percentage complete.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I've got some questions on this whole thing, the way it's set up,
sure.
Lisa. So let's let them go ahead and finish their presentation.
Okay. So we're essentially on the detached homes. The assessor had a value of $426,194 on all of the detached homes. That's all 17, all the same floor plan, relatively the same lots. We're coming in and appealing those, assuming 100% completion. We are appealing those at $405,000. Now, the complicated part of this appeal is that some of these homes had hardly even started construction as of the date of value. So the date of value was January 1st, 2023. Some of these homes were barely off the ground. Some of them just had foundations essentially as of the valuation date.
Can I stop you right there?
Sure.
And that is a point we can dispense with right now. Under the valuation rules by the assessor, they have until July 31st of the taxing year to value those properties. And every one of those properties that you say were partially completed, they all had occupancies before July 31st, 2023. So they're all considered finished homes for valuation purposes.
For the entire year. So you can assess, help me understand.
See,
are you saying that if
the confusion is January 1st value is used to pay taxes for the following year.
Correct.
It's not necessarily for that year. So regardless of when you do the value, it's still for the next year. And the value, the property is completed for the next year. So that's why they, in property under construction, can be valued all the way up through July 31st.
Okay. That being said, then we're still appealing the values of 426. We're still saying that those values, our opinion of the most probable purchase price would be $405,000.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. And so for those homes, three sales were presented for the detached homes. They're all the same sales for all of the appeals. So, for instance, if you were to look at the first appeal, which would be, I believe that's 994. Looking for that appeal number. Let's see here. Let me look at my master list. That would be, yes, 994. If you look at the sales provided, they are all the same property type, which is a zero lot line property type. And I think it's important. That's an important note to make. Zero lot line developments are very high density. They have limited street parking. Sometimes they're attached, sometimes they're detached, but they have a similar highest and best use. So when valuing a zero lot line detached home, it's important to use similar sales. So for instance, I wouldn't go, if I were valuing one of these homes, it isn't proper appraisal practice or valuation practice to use a sale from a typical subdivision, so to speak. Even if that sale has a similar lot size, it doesn't necessarily have the same highest and best use because it's located, it would be located in an area with greater lot sizes, more street parking, less density. So all of the sales provided are very similar in terms of quality of construction, in terms of size, gross living area, in terms of also being a zero lot line development.
Can you tell me what property number that is?
Yes. It is, so for case number 994, it is 98605-9603.
Okay.
Lot number one.
Yeah, all right, got it.
Okay, and if you go to the comparable property sales worksheet for that submission, you'll see the sales that have been provided. Along with that, I've provided the front elevation photos as well. I think it's worth noting that comparable number two was also used by this assessor. That's a good sale. That's just right across the street from the subject property. Similar locational characteristics, similar density, similar mix of both attached and detached homes on small lots. So very few adjustments were necessary to those sales, just a size adjustment primarily and some adjustments for bedrooms. Same size garage.
Okay, so all of those properties, do you have the, you say there's several properties that have the same comparables and the same value you're asking for?
Yes, so there are a total of 17 detached homes that we're appealing. And they all are the same floor plan, relatively the same age. So I've used the same sales to value all of those. So instead of running you through all 17, I just thought we'd start with this one lot. Since the data is the same, there's no need to explain it 17 times.
Tell me okay, the value you're putting on the $2,000 ones. Is that two? You said 276 or something like that? The original.
Well, that was under construction. That was under the preface that we could appeal those under construction. So we aren't. That being said, based on what you mentioned about the percentage complete, then the need to address the attached units goes away because the only thing we were refuting on those was the percentage complete. We agreed with the assessor's assessed value as complete. We were estimating a probable price under construction. So does that make sense?
All the ones in the $300,000 range. You're okay with the assessor's value?
Yes.
It's just the ones that are
yes.
the 405.
Just the detached.
Okay.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Which ones are in the 300,000 range?
There are a total that they were the attached homes. They are.
If you look at the assessor's response, you can see the ones where it shows recommended value 308, and the appellant said 318.
The first one is case number 997. And I can read you that.
Time out. I've got a list of all the properties right here.
Yes.
Which ones are this 405?
Go back to your list.
Where's
your first list that you put you had?
One moment. I think she's saying anything under this graph you have, Dan, that their estimate is 405 is what they're appealing. So it would start with property or case 1001.
No.
No. Okay. So perfect. Can you leave that up for just a moment? So first of all, you were asking which ones were the attached, the units that we were making the assumption we could appeal those under construction, but if not, we'll agree with the $315,000 roughly value. That would be case 997, 998. Let's keep going here. The next one is 1004, 1005.
And so the assessed value on all those?
So on those that I just read off, we were not necessarily refuting the assessed value on those as complete. We were refuting them as is, as of the date of January 1, 2023. But yes, you explained, because the assessor has the legal right to assume those are 100% complete, we would essentially be withdrawing those appeals.
Well, you're withdrawing those.
So we can't withdraw them.
If we are saying they are assessed at $308,000, for instance, for 1004.
Okay, you've got one of 315, 315, 308,
yep.
And 318. You got four properties, right?
Yes, the four attached, yes. Those are lower values because they're an attached product, which is, I'm assuming, why Alex had those at a lower assessed value.
So you would...
I'm trying to figure out a better way to say this. In other words, if those had not been under construction, we wouldn't have appealed them.
Right. They accept all those, yeah.
Yes, we accept those, you're right.
Okay.
So that makes it even easier. Now we're only talking about detached homes. All the same floor plan, all the same age, all the same quality. All the same comparables used to value those.
And is that all the rest of them?
Yes, it is. 17. We are, in our opinion, our professional opinion, the assessed value should be 405 for those. Again, we need to be, I'm speaking as complete.
Well, you got the first three, for instance, are 426.
That was the assessed value, yes.
426, and
the assessed value.
And those were under construction?
Those were all under construction, yes. But you can see 1,000, and if you look at 1,001, 1,002, those were complete as of January 1st, which is why those are at 405.
Yeah, no, I got it. I got it.
Okay.
So those three, your estimates would the 405 instead of the 207.
Yes, and because we are not legally allowed to have the percentage complete as of January 1, 2023, essentially then we're appealing all of them at 405.
We're saying what about 999 and 1,000? Are they under construction too?
999 and 1,000. They were under the same thing. We would be saying they're all 405.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I know there's a lot of data with this.
Okay.
So essentially, the assessor's office is saying 426 and change. We're saying 405 based on the comparable.
Okay, I'll rest in 405 until we get to 1015.
101. We're saying that's also 405. That's also a detached product.
They were under construction, is that why?
Yes, they were under construction.
Got it.
Any other questions about that? So the heart of the matter would be if we're looking, say, for instance, at Appeal 994, I believe it is, the first one, lot one. Our data we're presenting for support for our appeal is on the comparable property sales worksheet. Is there a way to show that, Allison, on the screen? You're the wizard. I'm wondering how you're doing this. I'll have to ask you after this meeting how you're showing this. There you go. Perfect. So we provided three comparables. Excuse me. All similar product type, all zero lot line. I have bracketed the subject's gross living area, age. We have a smaller lot size than the other comparables, but I don't think that really matters because similar to ours, they're all zero lot line, minimal backyards, minimal front yards. Similar zoning, similar ages. The construction quality grade was based on the assessor's ratings. They all have the same, they were all rated the same by the assessor's office.
Yeah.
Again, these are all high density, minimal street frontage, typically a high percentage of rentals, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases. So very few adjustments supported a probable price of $405,000. Photos for these sales were also provided, as well as a map. All of them are fairly close in, similar access to major transportation routes. Does anyone have any questions about the comparables used?
Did you look at the assessor's comparables?
I did. The assessor provided two comparables. One was my comparable number two, so a similar product type. The other comparable was located in a traditional subdivision near the downtown core.
And what's the difference? I mean, what do you say the difference is between them?
I would say that the one comparable that was provided in the downtown core doesn't have the same highest and best use. It's located in a traditional subdivision, larger lots, typically lower density, greater yard areas.
So it's not a zero lot. It's a full yard and everything?
Correct. It's not a zero lot. You'll notice there's quite a disparity between the two sales that were provided. Sale price-wise, there's quite a disparity. And it looks like maybe they were just averaged. Excuse me. Looks like the two that were provided were averaged.
And there, and the comp one that you, that's the same as yours, that has a traditional yard also? That's not a zero lot line?
Of my sales?
Yes.
My sale number one? All of my sales are zero lot line.
So that the comparable one...
And the assessor
one,
and I both agreed on comparable number two. Both the assessor and I used comparable number two.
Comparable number two.
Mm-hmm. That, we agree on that.
That's the assessor's comparable one, right?
Yes, it is. That development is located just across the street from this development. It shares all the access characteristics, lot size characteristics, and it also has a mix of attached and detached housing. That's a good comparable. I can support that.
Got it.
You'll see that my comparable number three is also very similar to this product.
Right.
It's a newer development as well.
Okay, and this, those same comps are used for all your...
Yes, they are. Right, so no need to go through all 17. They're all the same comparables. They've all been adjusted the same. Although they're very minimal adjustments. Coming from an appraisal background, this would be considered very minimal adjustments. An adjustment for the number of bedrooms and an adjustment for square footage for only one of the sales. So that's a pretty good spread.
Hey, I think I understand it.
Yep. Okay. I don't have questions?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. I think you've done a good job of clearing up what started out to be some confusion and whatever on it, but it looks reasonable.
Oh.
Your comparables look great.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. It's a lot of data. I know that. I expect questions, so feel free to ask any questions.
I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Pretty clear.
All right.
Okay. Alex, you want to tell us the assessor's position?
Yes. So for the subject properties that are detached that are being appealed, we did determine that there were two comparables. The comparable one, as Christy mentioned, is the same comparable used for comparable number two. But we disagree about the adjustments that are being made regarding the older comparable, that being 2013 built, is 9 years older than the subject property, and we have made adjustments as seen on our comparable sales grids, and we came to an adjusted sale price for that comparable at $407,000. We considered that to be one of the more comparable properties for the subject property, just given its location. It's kind of between the downtown corridor and Hazeldale, which does limit the smaller property uses that aren't obviously not comparable, such as early 1900s built homes. So we do agree that that is a very good comparable for the property. We disagree on the adjustments necessary for that. Our comparable to, yes, is farther south of the subject property. And we did make adjustments regarding the land value to take into account that it is a slightly larger lot and there are uses associated with that that are not available on the subject property. We have also made adjustments to the effective year built because it is an older style home that did go through some upgrades in the mid-2000s. But we still consider that to be comparable to the subject property given its style, as well as the lot size and its location to the subject property. We consider that to be on the upper spectrum of the value range, and so we really put more weight heavily on comparable one. but we found that, that both of these supported the subject's assessed value across the board. And we do disagree about the comparables used by the petitioner. While we understand that cell one was used, that single-family residence, it's not attached, but it is older than the subject properties, and as such, no adjustments were made to take into account those differences in age, which we feel is appropriate. Newer built home would be considered just less upgrades needed, and it being a 2008 built home, there's significant value difference between those 13 or 14 years, sorry. We also disagree about the use of sale number three, that is an attached townhome, and as such would not be considered comparable to the subject property, which is detached and does not share walls with adjoining structures. We can see in the market, as with the attached properties that the petitioner owns in that Lincoln Woods subdivision, there is a significant value difference between attached, truly attached homes and smaller lot homes. So we would disagree about the use of that sale as comparable to the subject properties being appealed.
Say that again. This is, what is it? It's a condo, you said?
It is an attached townhome. So they are sharing an adjoining wall. It is an outer unit. It does share just one adjoining wall, so it is not an inner unit.
And the subject property?
The subject property
is not attached.
It is not attached.
Okay, well, actually, I would like to, if we're going to get, I guess, into the details as much, I would like to point out that actually, out of the 17, 15 of them are technically zero lot line detached units. So there is a distinguished, if you're going to, you know, get that detail, and I had sent this information to Alex before, trying to explain it to him, and maybe I'll try to find it again. But in essence, you know, each of the units that are there, 15 out of the 17, I guess, would you could actually attach them on a zero lot line common wall, but the code does allow you to do a detached zero lot line. So in essence, there's only 5 feet between the units, but instead of attaching them on a common wall, we just spaced them out. So to try to, you know, provide a, you know, it's more desirable for someone living there if they don't actually have the wall attached. But they are constructed with a firewall on the one side, and you could attach them. So there is a, I guess, a degree of, and there's only 5 feet between the units, as opposed to typically you'd have 5 foot plus a 5 foot setback, and there's only a 10 foot total. There's only 5 feet between the units. So there's it is very dense, as Christy had mentioned, and it's also, you know, it's more similar to an attached townhouse development than to a, you know, a standard detached subdivision. So I think there is, I know it's kind of a fine distinction, but there is, I think there should be some consideration for that as well, because of the, you know, the small, and there's very limited, there's no, basically there's zero, you know, usable side yards, and the rear yards are, you know, 5 or 10 feet deep. So they're not very big rear yards as well. So I just wanted to point that out. Thanks.
Even the larger lots in the subdivision, it doesn't necessarily mean they have a larger usable area, because this site had to be, I mean, for lack of a better term, you basically had to excavate out terrace the hillside in order to put in some of those lots. And so even on your units that have a larger lot size, they don't necessarily have more usable area because of that terracing. I provided a topography map just to kind of illustrate that point, why I wasn't making any kind of adjustments for some of those lots that were a little bit larger. I also think too, and just to comment on adjustments. So this is a product type. It's an entry level product type, high percentage of FHA purchasers. This is typically a first time home buyer type of property. It has very little buyer elasticity, meaning buyers aren't coming in with a lot of extra cash to pay for amenities or a lot of extra cash to bring to the table, so to speak. So in the appraisal world, you can make adjustments for age. Obviously, you can make adjustments for size. But true appraisal methodology, you should only be making adjustments that are market derived. In my business, if I'm doing an appraisal, I can't make an adjustment unless I can prove it. And the only way to prove it is based on pairing sales. You can also use what's called the extraction method, where you make an adjustment, say you adjust them all for size across the board, and then you look at the numbers and say, is the market actually adjusting these sales? If you look at my three sales that were provided, the spread between them is minimal. It's $387,000 roughly to $405,000. That's telling you that buyers at this price point are coming in and they aren't paying a lot of extra. They are paying more for an extra bedroom, it appears. Sale number one is the only one with four bedrooms. Four bedrooms are very rare in the market. And so it's the market-derived adjustment for that was roughly $10,000 a bedroom. So that's an atypical unit type. All of James's units have four bedrooms, and so I adjusted all of those sales up $10,000, sale number two and three, to reflect that. But that's a true market-derived adjustment. Also, the true market-derived adjustment was for size. It was clear that buyers were paying a little bit more, $79 a square foot, roughly, for that adjustment for size. But when you make those market-derived adjustments, there was no adjustment for age for those units. Sometimes that's because they've been updated prior to the sale. Sometimes that's because the spread between the sales isn't very wide. In this case, comparable number three was built in 2020. It's only a couple years older than the subject property. So buyers probably aren't saying, hey, I have an extra $5,000 or $10,000 to spend on that. Because again, it's an entry-level buyer. A lot of times it's an FHA buyer. They only have so much down payment to bring to the table. So I just wanted to point out that of the adjustments I made, they're market derived versus making those adjustments from some other method. So my adjustments are for size and for bedroom type, but it's a very limited spread between those true sales, those three sales, which shows me they're good market comparables. When you get a wide spread in sales prices, that's a red flag that you're not using sales of a similar highest and best use. And so that's why we were refuting sale number two from the assessor's office. It's clear with that wide of sale prices that they most likely are not a similar product type.
Could you pull up number two just so you can see what it looks like? Do you have that one, Allison?
Okay, those are my sales. I think, James, were you asking for the assessor sale number two?
Yeah, the assessor, the one that's on, isn't it called Levina Street? Isn't
it Levina? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
There you go. I think that looks like it.
Yeah.
That's the wrong, I think that's the wrong one. That's the one for the attached housing. I can't believe you even found that one that fast. There's a lot of data here. There you go. So the spread between those two sales is almost $100,000, whereas the spread between the sales I'm using is minimal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just wanted if you look visually at comp number two there, the Levina Street, it's more of a standard Trojan house. Look how wide it is,
Exactly.
It's a traditional house and maybe a smaller lot subdivision, but it's still, it's not really as comparable of a product or comparable of a type of structure that we're in here looking at. So
one of the things too to look at is when you see a large spread between two sale prices, It's also telling you that the predominant home value within a half a mile radius of comparable two is most likely a lot higher than it would be between the subject property or comparable number one. So sometimes it's an issue of location. Even though on a map, Levina Street might not seem far away, there are some locational characteristics in the immediate area of the subject and comparable number one that are most likely a little more similar than comparable number two. And just knowing what I know of the market area, Levina Street is in a traditional subdivision. There are large lot sizes in that area, more traditional homes, street parking, lower density, higher predominant home values overall. Also closer to the downtown core. I also know from doing development work and feasibility work, when you're looking at a site to develop, that you're going to develop with these zero lot line detached homes, you only look at similar product types when you're trying to determine feasibility, because it's its own animal, so to speak. It has its own challenges, its own set of lot costs, home costs, buyer pool. It just has its own chain of feasibility. So it's important to be using homes with a similar characteristic, zero lot line characteristic.
So I don't have any other questions on it. I think, as far as I'm concerned, it's been covered pretty well.
Yep, nor do I.
Yeah, I don't have any questions on that.
Alex, do you have an evaluation for each one of these properties? Because I can't find 997, case number 997.
Let me see.
He definitely does. Do you not? I thought I made the mistake.
Should have it in here somewhere. Most of my stuff is organized by property ID.
Well,
it ends in 606.
Yeah.
606.
Yeah.
Just slowly scrolling through this, sorry.
It's okay. I can pull it up from PAX, Dan. One moment.
It's a lot of data.
I had this prepared for when we initially scheduled these hearings, so I might not have reviewed it again.
What was the address of that Levina one again? Was that 4014 Northwest Levina? Is that correct?
I believe so.
I'm pulling that up. It's a... value. Yeah, that's the same picture. And what was the value on that one from the comp again?
Were you wanting to know the sale price or the adjusted value?
Well, the assessor suggests. Oh, the sale. So the sales price, what I'm seeing in here. So I see a sale price here in 522 of 466, but I thought that was like 512 or something.
514,850.
514,850.
Yeah. Alex and Dan, I don't see 606 attached to PAX, so I don't have that.
And that was an attached unit, it looks like.
Yeah. So that would have been the ones they agree with, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I just don't have a. That's what I was looking for. I don't even have it. And was it appealed? Does the appellant have it?
Are you asking if the appeal was sent in for 1004? Is that what you're asking?
No.
It's one ending in 606.
So we have a petition for it, but there isn't an assessor letter for it attached to PAC. So you do not have the assessor letter, but there was an appeal for it based on that completion argument. So we
this petition 997, Christy, just in case you're wondering.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I got it. I just couldn't find it in the assessor's information. Okay.
I don't have any other questions.
I have a question. I have some questions on. It's indicative of several of them, but and let's go to. I don't care. 998, I guess that's one of the first ones.
Okay. 998.
I'm asking this of the assessor now. The assessed value is 315,617, but the comps that you have with it are range from 353 to 444. Can you look at that one, Alex?
Yeah, I'm pulling that one up really quick.
We're on 998, correct?
Yes, got that one.
Thank you. Okay.
125 Northeast Newhouse Road. Yes, we had a comp spread from comp 1 353 to comp 2 at 444.9.
And how did the recommended assessor value come up with 315?
That was the value that we had sent out for the subject property initially. These are just the comparable sales supporting that. I think that's just an indicator that our zero lot line attached units are under assessed on an average basis, rather than anything else, if that makes sense.
Okay. Let me see if there are any others in that. Yeah, I guess it is all of those. All right. I have no further questions.
Okay.
James, do you have anything you wanted to mention before we sign off?
I guess one. There did seem to be kind of a high valuation, like on the land percentage versus the building percentage. So in 2023, I think the original, they went from 130 a lot to 150 a lot up in this year in 2024. So I would also, kind of want to make the point that the land value, I think, is high for especially these small lots that are attached type units to, 150. That's, higher than what I've, seen in the market, for those size lots. So I think I'm not sure if that was an average that was used because, it's a higher value. So anyway, that I think also that impacts the total valuation by having probably a higher than market for the actual land value.
So essentially, James, am I repeating what you're saying correctly? So one of the reasons we're saying the value should be 405,000 is because overall, perhaps the difference of roughly $20,000 has to do with the assessment on the land value.
Yeah, that appears correct. There's, I mean, I don't know if
So that might, that the basis, you know, essentially, I know it's difficult to talk about components because on most valuations, it's the sales approach and not the cost approach that we're using. But I think James' point is valid, which is one of the reasons why we're coming to a lower assessed value is because the land value component might be high for this type of property. But I will say there are very few lot sales in the market of this type of product type. Most of the time, the developer retains those lots for their own home production business, or they sell them in bulk to one builder. So there's not a lot of data, especially at this location, for lot values. But both James and I have seen these in the greater Clark County market area selling in bulk, typically.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. And I apologize for the confusion on percentage complete. But essentially, it looks like the bottom line is we are saying the most probable price would be 405 versus 426. So hopefully that explains it.
Got it. Okay. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Allison, anything else that we need to do on our part?
No.
Anything else, Alex, on your part?
Nope. Nothing from our office. Thank you guys very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye. Close the hearing.